Welcome to the Igniting Souls podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner. Carrie believes if you want to experience clarity in business and in life, then discovering who you are, why you're here, and where you're going is a must. The Igniting Souls podcast is dedicated to help you do just this. And now, here's Carrie.
Hey folks, it's Carrie Oberbrunner, and I have here Deborah Brown. How are you doing today, Deborah?
I'm great. How are you?
Awesome. Hey, listen, for everybody who's out there, we are going to be talking about a very critical topic. And believe it or not, board members make mistakes. Is this true, Deborah?
It could be true.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So we are going to be talking about the five mistakes board members make and how to avoid them. And if you're wondering, who is Carrie talking to? Let me tell you what, Deborah is a expert. She's a rock star. She might not admit that, but she is like the top of the top in terms of this topic. And her company's in Canada. Let's get right in with the value that we're gonna provide today. Let's talk about one of the mistakes, and then we'll kind of learn more about you and your background. But what mistake do board members make?
Well, let me see. I think the very first mistake many board members make is they join a board without knowing what's expected of them.
Ooh, join a board. So they think it was an honor to be asked, or they think maybe they're asking me because of my background, but unclear expectations?
Mm-hmm, very much so. So, you know, if you want to avoid this mistake, you want to make sure that you're doing your homework. And if you're the organization bringing board members on, you got to do your homework too, and make sure that you're really clear about what the expectations are, so that you don't just assume. A lot of board members just assume, oh, I'll join this board and I'll be able to do this. Yeah. I'll be able to advocate for my position, or I'll be able to change the world. But the thing is, they may not be able to do that. What are the expectations?
So is it good to even just like straight up ask the person if you get invited to be part of a board? Or maybe people right now are saying, hey, Carrie, I'm an author, I'm a coach, I'm a speaker, I'm an entrepreneur. I want to create my own board. You're saying for that person, they should ask a potential board member, but give them the expectations up front.
Absolutely. You want to do what I call pre-orientation. So before you even ask somebody, or you just want them to consider it, you want to be able to know, well, what does the organization do? Don't just assume that you know. Don't, you know, assumptions, ambiguity is not your friend in governance.
Yes.
And so you want to know, what's the strategy of the organization? Is it, do I fit with that? Can I add strategic value to their strategy, to their priorities?
Yeah. And so, so I was going to say, I'm talking like everything, like here's how often we meet, here's how long our meetings are. And then what? Like, give me some.
Yeah. More. What's the time commitment? How often does the board meet? Are there board committees? And are you expected to serve on one of those committees?
Ooh.
When do they meet? How long for? What about travel? Where does the board meet? I sit on a large not-for-profit board. It's an international board. And so you got to be up for international travel. We've had board meetings in Albania and South Africa, Malaysia, Indonesia.
Wow.
We're coming up to one in South Korea. And so are you up for that? And how does that all happen? And I think another one, Carrie, is, and sometimes we don't think about this, but it's, what are the financial expectations? So depending on the sector that you're in, that's going to differ. If you're in the private sector, there's going to be compensation. What's the expectation for that? If you're in the not-for-profit sector, what about costs or expenses? Do they cover your expenses or don't they? Because they may not. And I've seen, especially in the US, I've seen a lot of not-for-profit boards that there's an expectation of a certain dollar amount in donations.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. That is so I was asked to be part of a board once. I'm not going to name any places, but it, you know, I was young, very young. And I thought, wow, I'm already donating a ton of my time. And this was for education. It was for a for-profit educational institution. Mm-hmm. So they asked me to be on their board, and I'm on the board, and all of a sudden they're like passing around a thing that says like how much you're going to donate. And I was a pastor.
It's like going to church on Sunday.
Yeah. I was a pastor and I'm like, what do you mean? I'm actually giving you my time, but now you want me to donate too. So but see, there you go. There's an example. They weren't clear.
Exactly. Yeah.
I didn't stay on that board long, not because I'm cheap, but because back then I was in my 20s and I was like, you know, I'm just starting my family. I don't have money to give. All right, let's go to number two. What's the second one?
Oh, this one is just so it's like the biggest mistake and the most common mistake. And it's that they try to do the job of the CEO or the executive director or even the staff. And I think it's related to the first one. They don't know the expectations, so they don't know their role. And so, therefore, they're trying to do a job that's not theirs to do. Wow. Happens all the time. And so, I'll tell you, it breaks down trust between your board and your management team, gets you on a vicious cycle of negativity.
Give me like the story. Give me the like, yeah, I'm not saying you got to name names, but like paint the picture for us on this one.
Well, it's let me put it this way. So people who serve on boards are often used to running their own business. So they're used to hands-on. They handle staff issues. They set compensation. Maybe they're even actually creating products and services or delivering products and services. But when you're on the board, you're not there to operate the business. You're not there to get into the mailroom or go and talk to staff and ask them how they're doing. Or, you know, that's just not your job. You're there to oversee it. And you're there to gain reasonable assurance that the organization's on track, that it's going in the direction that you set, not to actually do it. And so transitioning from being a manager or an executive to serving on a board is really hard for some people to do that. It's a little bit like the transition from a parent to a grandparent.
Interesting. That's a good, I like that one.
Because, you know, I understand this because I have six grandchildren, so I know a little bit about this. And my kids would not appreciate it if I drove over to their house every day to make sure that they're doing things the way that I would want them to do, or giving them advice on, you know, what I think the kids should wear or what you should feed them. Like, they're not going to appreciate that. But they do appreciate it if they've got a particular issue and they ask for my advice. And I give it to them. They always appreciate that.
That is so good.
So good. It's a little bit like that. If you're a board member, you have to relearn how you engage with the organization and at what level.
I love it. So I'm going to ask Tanisha and our friends to drop in governinginscarytimes.com. Governinginscarytimes.com. This is what we're really talking about today. Why did you write this book? What does it do? And I'll tell you what, I just hired someone recently, not cheap, but the advice they gave me in legal terms was so significant. Like, I almost feel like you get what you pay for these days. If you want to just find free advice, I mean, you can take it anywhere and you might make massive mistakes. But this book is worth it. I mean, this book is worth the price of admission. What do people get when they get this book?
Okay, well, that book we wrote, it's a 10-step roadmap for boards to be able to navigate through an emergency and really in and through something like COVID or some Wow. sort of emergency. And so that's really what motivated that book. But I think what's in that book and what you'll get, we've got a free tool there for you if you go to that website. Yeah. You're going to get a series of questions related to your HR issues in your organization and how to oversee Wow. those. And I think that book is actually part of the solution to the third mistake. And the third mistake that board members make is they ask the wrong questions in the wrong way, at the wrong time, at the wrong level.
Oh, what's a wrong question?
Let me see.
So let's say I show up and I'm like, why aren't we more profitable? You know, and I start up on day one.
Well, that's actually not a bad question. Interesting. As long as you don't ask it with your fist.
Yeah, don't ask.
You know, why aren't we more profitable? That might be a good question. But are we profitable is not really a good question. It's a closed question. So Ooh. Management could say yes. They could have made $1 in profit.
Interesting.
And they could go, yes, we're profitable. End of story. So closed questions. Traditionally, boards will ask so many closed questions. In fact, when we work with our clients, sometimes we do what we call observations, and we sit like a fly on the wall in the back of the room and we analyze how they ask questions. And I don't know if you know this, but research shows that the average person will ask about 100 questions every day. And so we go into board rooms and we track every single question, and we track the ratio. Is it strategic? Is it operational? Is it open? Is it closed? Is it building up? Is it tearing down? And so we actually analyze that for them. And often they ask the wrong questions, a lot of closed questions that really don't take the conversation anywhere. And so you want to be avoiding did you, will you, can you, are you, questions like yeah. that. And okay. be asking more questions like how might we, why did we, what did you consider, what are the pros and cons, what the implications, why do you think that, what more can you tell me about that? So you want to plan your questions, and then you're not going to be asking the wrong ones.
I love that. That is so good.
And that's why in that book, Carrie, we've got 170 questions, potential questions that boards can ask. You can kind of go through them to plan your questions to see how you might get through whatever it is that you're facing in the boardroom.
So good. And this book just came out. And yeah, I love it. It's in Kindle, paperback, hardcover, fantastic. And yeah, we couldn't even put governing in COVID times because Amazon.
No, we couldn't. We put on the cover the little COVID germs. That's as close as we could get to saying COVID for Amazon, for the Amazon police.
That's the truth. Well, good. Let's go to number four.
Number four. Well, they think they can be a board member without learning how to be one.
Oh, what does that mean?
Well, I think that, you know, sometimes people think, well, I've been asked to be on a board, so I must be qualified. Or I have, you know, I've worked in business for X number of years, so I must be qualified. Or I've been volunteering for the organization, so I must be qualified and I can understand government. Anybody can do that. You know,
Totally.
Yeah.
So it's like almost like that, the curse of knowledge. They almost think that I've been there, done that. I don't, you know, I'm not teachable. They come off with like too much confidence or arrogance, maybe.
Well, I don't, it could be confidence. It could be arrogance. I think, you know, I can tell you a story a few years ago. Actually, I'm going to date myself, but this was about 25 years ago. Yeah. And I used to run a national conference in corporate governance for the conference board. Okay. And so every year I would plant a question because I knew board members were not doing their job. There'd been a big report come out. Where were the directors? Directors were failing all over the world. And I knew board members did not know how to govern. They knew how to run companies, but they didn't know how to govern. So at these national conferences, I planted the question, do you think board members should get training in how to be a board member and in corporate governance? And for, I don't know, it was about 5 years in a row. No, we don't need it. We don't need it. That's an offense to us. And so we pushed and pushed and pushed. And now we've got national director education programs. We have an international one that we've run for a number of years, certification program. And the whole thinking on that has changed. But I think it has its roots in that I've done my, you know, I've worked all these years, somehow I deserve to be a board member, even though I don't necessarily know how to be one.
That's interesting. I know my wife's a counselor and other people are in professional industries and they have CEUs, continuing education units, where they have to continue to be up on the trends. Mm-hmm. And every 2 years they need 30 CEUs. And I get that some people complain and say, you know what, I've been a counselor for 20 years. Why do I need to do CEUs? But we're all lifelong learners. We should
be. Absolutely.
So I like that. Now, does your company, first of all, what is the name of it? And second of all, do you provide these types of trainings for boards?
Absolutely, we do. Professionaldirector.com is where you can learn about.
I think she might have froze, but I think she was saying professionaldirector.com. Let me go there. I'm going to check that out. So, folks, as we're getting some tech stuff, let me just share this. This topic, to me, I'm going to remove her for a second. We'll bring her back on. But for me, this is something that is essential. And you might say, Carrie, I'm not big enough to have a board yet. You know, I'm just a small not-for-profit, or I'm a small for-profit. Folks, there's even been people that have personal advisory boards. Ooh, let me ask you that. What about getting a personal advisory board for yourself? Is that even possible? I mean, I had one of those for very many years in the beginning, and it was so important. I had on there a CPA. I had on there a lawyer. I had on there someone who was in the financial market because I felt weak in these areas. And I felt like, you know what? I don't know these topics and I'm going to make a ton of mistakes if I don't get smart people around me. So I literally created a personal advisory board. We only met 4 times a year and we always met at breakfast and I always published an agenda beforehand. So I basically said, hey guys, and ladies, here's the date, time. Here's the agenda. I'm buying breakfast. And by the way, I don't recommend eating over your board meeting. I'm just being real. I had to learn that. I would say eat before, then have the board meeting. I'll tell you why. This is a big tip. At a restaurant, if you have all the waiters and waitresses and food and drinks being passed around, it totally messes up flow and it messes up focus. And so I want to encourage you, if you have a personal advisory board, I would challenge you to not do it over a meal. Have the meal before, have the meal after. But when you're focused on business, be focused on business, not, hey, can I get eggs with that? All right. So these are little tips that I'm sharing about along the way. As we get Deborah back, my biggest task as the person, whatever you want to call it, on the board was to cast vision. So folks, let me tell you what, I would do an amazing job at casting vision and saying, folks, here's what we achieved last quarter. Here's all the places I spoke. Here's the souls that were ignited. And that was fantastic. So we're going to bring Deborah back on here. Hey, you're good.
Sorry about that. I don't know.
No worries.
Happened.
It's all good. Hey man, I just made it happen. I shared about a personal advisory board that I created back in 2003 to kind of help me in my author career. But let's get to step number five. Once you get it.
Number five is they agree to be a board. Sorry?
Oh, no, you go for it. Yeah. Number five.
Okay. They agree to be a board member for all the wrong reasons.
Share about that.
Well, okay. Let's talk about ego. You mentioned this earlier. And, you know, somebody says to you, oh, will you come serve on my board? And it's really hard to say no. Some people just, they go, oh, that sounds really important. Even though they may not necessarily be equipped, they may not have the competency, they may not even feel called or aligned with that the particular purpose of the organization, but they can say, hey, I'm on the board of whatever the organization is, and it makes them feel good about themselves. And that's good. It's good to feel good about yourself, but you want to make sure that you're aligned with the organization that you're serving, that your personal calling is aligned with that. So
that is so good. That is so good. Wow. I'll tell you what, Deborah, and I haven't been asked to be part of a lot of boards, but I have been asked to be part of a couple. And the last two I was asked to be part of, I said no in about 2 minutes. And I think the people were shocked. In fact, they were. They're like, well, aren't you going to pray about it? Aren't you going to debate, you know? And I said no. And I said, here's why. Because I feel that at this point in my life, that's not my best contribution. So I'm not against boards. I don't think they're bad. But I think for me, and maybe you can talk to this, for me, I was part of an elder board for 12 years in a church. And I pulled out all my hair. Let's just put it out.
You wouldn't be alone in that.
I pulled out all my hair because I have a bias for action. And that particular elder board was very slow. We talked about everything 25 times. We didn't take action. And it for me, it was very frustrating. But it was my job, so I had to be there. Does every board need to be like that? Or are there boards that are healthy? And are there boards that are life-giving? I know you probably have seen some.
Yes, there are. And usually it comes right back to governance, and it comes right back to these five mistakes. If you're not making these five mistakes, your governance is going to be strong. You're going to be engaging at the right level. You're going to be contributing. You're going to be adding value. You're going to be aligned with the culture and the purpose, and you're going to have a healthy boardroom culture. But if you have a series of directors all making these same mistakes, then you're not going to have a healthy boardroom culture, and therefore you're like a leadership lid on the organization, and that's not good for anybody. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That
and
is
you
so
know,
good.
I think the other reason, you know, sometimes people just have trouble saying no. Usually you get asked to be on a board, and often you know in your gut. The answer to this should be no.
Yes.
Or the answer should be yes. But if you know it's no, you know it in your gut, but you don't want to say no. It's your friend who asked you, or your colleague, or it's someone else who's asked you. You just have to come to a point in life where you're able to say no to some things.
Absolutely.
And I think that's one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I think another reason, Carrie, I just want to touch on this one thing is, and because I know people listening, a lot of them might be in the not-for-profit space or even a faith-based church.
Yeah.
And so they think that they are there to advocate for a particular position, or maybe they think they can run the organization better than the people running it can. And so, again, they're in it for the wrong reason. They should be there to be a governor and to oversee and lift the organization up, not try to change it from within. Yeah. So I think that's a really, that's not a good reason to serve on a board.
Wow. This is so good. Well, folks, listen, I want to share a couple things here as we close. Amazon doesn't lie. If you look here, you see this, Deborah?
Yes.
Last purchased April 7th. Like, so, so all I'm saying is I got this book. I love this book. In fact, I've given it away to other people as well. I think it's something that if you don't get it, it's going to cost you. Meaning you might say, well, gee, Carrie, that'll cost me 15 bucks. It'll save you 15 years of your life. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like back in those elder boards, again, I believed in the mission of the organization. Absolutely. But the governance was so much of a struggle that I remember leaving twice a month on Mondays. And my wife would be like, hey, where are you going? And I'd say, I'm going to the elder board. She's like, oh man, you know, and I would come, you know, and it was, and that's sad. And I feel like the mission was so good, but the governance wasn't. Imagine if you have a great mission and amazing governance. So what would you like to say? I know you have this amazing tool that you're giving away free. We'll tell people about that one more time. But what would you like to say in conclusion? Where can people find out about you, all these things?
Well, you can find out about me at governancesolutions.ca, or you know, the best way is just go to governingandscarytimes.com and download your tool, and then you'll be connected with me, and you can get access to all kinds of free resources. As I said, we do free training every other Tuesday at 1 o'clock, and you can sign up for that. And
that's amazing.
We have all kinds of help from.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Well, folks, we're dropping all the links in.
Yeah. So we do free training. We've got, we run different series in terms of governance.
Excellent.
Okay. Excellent.
Deborah, sorry about that. We're breaking up a little bit.
I'm not able to see chat. I don't know if we have any questions, but I'd be happy in the minute or two we got left to answer any question.
Yes. Anybody have any questions? So any questions whatsoever, go ahead. And now is your chance to talk with one of the top people in North America on governance. She is pumping out the books. And I just got your other really big, thick one as well. What is that original big book that you got? I think it's Governance Solutions. So Governance Solutions, folks, is the other big book, which is fantastic. And I'll tell you what. We're just experiencing a little bit of tech issues, but it's all good because Deborah dropped the value today. She was amazing. And I know I learned the 5 mistakes board members make and how to avoid them. So I hope you are blessed today. Remember, this live stream is for ACEs, authors, coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers. And all 4 of those groups many times are either on boards or have boards. So thank you, everybody. And thank you, Deborah Brown. And thank you for your amazing company putting out these great resources. We'll see you later. Be a soul on fire. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Igniting Souls podcast. We invite you to join us at our annual Igniting Souls conference designed for authors, coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers. You can learn more at IgnitingSoulsConference.com. We look forward to seeing you there.